Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. We've been getting a lot of traction lately, a lot of downloads, a lot of listens, and I just wanted to let you guys know I really appreciate you guys tuning in and listening to the podcast. We've been getting some really cool guests lately, and I hope we have a lot more to come. There's some really cool guys that I've been trying to get on, and I think we're going to have some cool content coming up. This week we have Hunter Larson of Rider Industries. He's one of the sponsors of the podcast. He has some really cool stuff coming. And on this episode, we talk a little bit about his new bipod that he just put out. And then him and Trevor Davenport also just started an outfitting business. They're in Arizona on the strip. And man, he's been spending a lot of time out there. Every time I talk to him, he's either coming or going to the strip, and he knows that really well. He's been guiding out there for a while under other people, and then they just kind of started their own thing this year. But he's going to be on the podcast for this episode, and he tells some really cool stories about some just giant deer. But what really kind of stuck out to me is his tracking stories. I think tracking's kind of been a lost art, and I kind of feel like that's a way to kill big bucks consistently nowadays. I think everybody has the big glass. Everyone kind of knows how to glass and all that other stuff. But I think tracking is, like I said, kind of a lost art, and it takes a second to kind of learn, and it's something that's not easy. And I think that a lot of the big buck hunters that I've interviewed, they all kind of know how to track pretty good. And I think that's something that kind of sets people apart from the average hunter. Anyways, Hunter has some really cool stories on here and kind of gives us some tips on tracking that I think you guys are really going to like. But before we start, I just want to thank one more sponsor, is Art of the Hunt. That's Art of the H-N-T is how they spell it. They're doing some really cool stuff. I sent a few pictures of my strip buck to him. And then what he does is he creates a design or a logo out of it. And it's actually the logo on the Instagram and the podcast now that he designed. So you send your buck or your bull or whatever into him, and then he designs a logo for you. And then he can put it on hats and shirts and phone cases, all sorts of things. And actually right now they're running a promo. If you order a piece of apparel or headwear from them and use the code LAUNCH2024, that's one word, LAUNCH2024, at checkout, you're also going to get a free custom phone case with your logo on it. So it's pretty cool what they're doing. Just kind of like another way to preserve your memories of your buck or your bull. And that's Art of the H-N-T, Art of the Hunt. So go ahead and check them out. But for now, let's go ahead and get right into our episode.
All right, guys. Welcome to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. We got Hunter Larson on. I think this is going to be a really cool episode. Him and his buddy Trevor just started a new outfitting business there in Arizona, Next Level Outfitting. So it'll be fun to kind of talk to him about that. And then he also has Rider Industries. He has some really cool products going there. And Hunter's just a killer. It seems like whenever he shows up, big bucks seem to die. And he can turn them up and hunt hard. So I'm excited to talk to him. So thanks for getting on, Hunter.
Oh, yeah, you bet.
So I kind of wanted to start with yours and Trevor's outfitting business. How did that kind of come about? Obviously, you guys have guided a ton out there, and then you kind of made the jump to kind of start your own thing.
Yeah, so Trevor's the one that introduced me to the strip about 6 years ago, guiding. But Trevor's been doing it for probably 15 years or so out there, and we just wanted to keep it small and just hunt the top bucks in the unit. And so we just decided to branch off on our own, and that's what we're going to set out to do. We're spending more time out there than ever, so it's going to be exciting.
That's awesome. So as of right now, it's just you and Trevor doing it?
Yeah, we'll have some buddies help us, but our goal is with like archery hunters is probably just take one archery hunter, and then on the rifle hunt, the maximum of two, and just want to keep camp small and focus on quality. We can get our quantity fix in Nevada and other places like that, but for the strip, we want to just target the largest animals with the fewest amount of hunters possible.
Oh, I see. That makes sense. So what units will you guide? And then, so you are doing Nevada too?
Well, me and Trevor, we do hunts for Greg Crow, Mogi on Rim in Nevada. We just started Next Level just to do mule deer hunts, and that's it. So we're doing 13B archery and rifle, and then that will take precedence over 13A archery because they line up at the same time. But we'll do a 13A rifle hunter as well, and then maybe some of the late Kaibab stuff, but mostly focused on just 13B and 13A rifle.
Okay. So I've been talking to you a little bit the last few weeks, and you've been spending a ton of time out on the strip. I was just curious how you think it's kind of looking this year compared to other years and what you're seeing out there.
Well, it's hard without trail cameras because you can see a deer and it looks like it's going to be big. But then you come here in Utah, and like I made the mistake of going out a little too early. I went out like the 1st of June and started to see bucks all balled up, and then spent a lot of time out there. And seeing all the bucks balled up, it just feels like they're a little bit behind out there, but the feed looks good in most areas, and there's still flowers on the cliff rows. And the reason I was talking about going out a little early is I was finding bucks on the strip, and then I'd come to Utah or Nevada, and it seems like they're fully grown out, but it seems like the bucks on the strip are just a little bit behind. They're all still balled up, but I think it's going to be a good year. I found a handful of deer that I didn't even know about from last year. I haven't even really looked for any of the bucks that I know survived last year, so I would say it's going to be average or a little better than average.
Yeah, okay, that's promising. So yeah. You kind of mentioned the trail cameras too, and I've asked this to a few of the guests, but like, do you feel like that kind of spreads things out, like as far as pressure on some of the bigger bucks, or are most people hunting the same spots than if you find an obscure buck that you kind of have it to yourself, or what do you kind of think on that?
There's certain spots on the strip you're definitely going to have pressure no matter what, just where the big numbers of deer are. But there, it kind of goes two ways. I love it without the trail cameras. It's awesome. I'd rather glass than drive around all day and all night checking cameras. But if you do find a big deer and somebody else finds the same big deer, you might not have four or five other outfitters, but you're now limited on how many big deer you know about. So you're going to be competing with that outfitter throughout the entire hunt. Where to be before, without cameras, some guys might leave and go pursue another deer. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I guess the number of big deer you know about is probably going to be less because you're not going to have eyes on every water. So
they're more valuable. Right, like I went out, like I said, first week or so of June, and I've been to a different spot every single time I've went out. I go out about four or five nights a week and probably two or three mornings a week, and it's just you're a human trail camera at that point.
Yeah. So I was gonna ask you about like your scouting techniques. Like you seem to always be on big deer. Is that kind of what you're doing now, is just like climbing up on a knoll and glassing, and you're spreading yourself out? Like you just said that you're not hitting the same spot twice. Like, maybe if you would just kind of like tell us how you go about that, and then like at what point when you find a big buck, like is it like mid-August that you're like, okay, I'm going to try to figure out more about him, so I'm going to spend multiple days, or like at what point do you stop looking and focus in on a deer, or how do you go about your scouting and stuff like that?
Yeah, like it just depends on the storms, because there's a lot of dirt tanks out on the strip. So like the 1st of June, there's still a little bit of spring moisture in them, but they're all pretty much going to be dried up around the middle of June. And so it kind of spreads the deer out, but I'll just go to different spots and see if there's deer in that area at that time, like when I'm going out, and it gives me the ability to check all those dirt tanks and stuff. And so I'll do that for like June and July, and I'll just go to all these different spots, and then I'll go back, I mark all the spots on the map, and then I won't even go back to the same, if I find a big deer, I won't even go back to that same spot until about this time of year, August, and try to turn the deer up. And so like as of right now, I've got 4 or 5 deer that I really need to check on to see where they grew, because a month ago they were really balled up and I couldn't tell what they were going to be, but they were obviously a lot bigger than anything else out there.
Yeah, they were showing some promise.
Yeah, and then like as far as the hunting part of it goes, and even if we can't turn up a big buck, that's the thing without trail cameras, you don't know for sure if there's a big buck in the area or not. And the buck could have moved, because when they're rutting, especially during a rifle hunt, they could be moving. And so a lot of people will sit on the hill for 4 or 5 hours in the morning, then they'll go back to camp. The easy part of the hunting has ended for me, but what I've picked up from my mom's husband, Dave Black, is tracking deer. You can hunt literally all day long. You don't have to glass all day unless you know there's a deer in the area and you don't want to bump him. But if you got fresh conditions, you can track a buck out. And over the last couple of years, it has improved my success, and I can't sit still. So during the middle of the day, that's what I'm doing all day long, is tracking deer.
Interesting. So I kind of have a scenario, like a question, I guess. So like, if you're hunting this deer in thick stuff, you kind of know his pattern, but as soon as he gets into the cedars, like you can't really glass him at all because it's so thick. Like, would you scout? I mean, would you track him during the hunt, or would you be afraid to kind of like, you think you'd bump him out of the country? Like, would you be afraid of that a little bit, or what are your experiences with that?
So, like, with a bow, that's really hard. Mostly, like, what I'm doing, like, during the archery hunt is getting on the track, but not necessarily pursuing the track. So, like, find a track, follow it until you can – after you follow a buck long enough, you can kind of tell, like, if they're going to wrap around a hill and they're going to a north side, you kind of just let off, and that will give you an idea. You can look around. You pull back and look around and see – if there's good glassing spots, and then you can glass the buck up and move in with a bow. But on the rifle hunt, you can be pretty aggressive with it. If you know the deer's in the area, you don't necessarily want to track the deer out. But if you know, if he's not coming out in the daylight, you've got to do something. And so if you just get a short range gun, just like an old school 3-9 scope, and just a light gun, and you have the hunter to do it, you can be really successful getting on a fresh track.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so two. Before we started recording, you said you've killed or helped kill quite a few bucks recently using tracking. Do you mind like going into one of those stories?
Yeah, it was actually my first. So I've been watching my mom's husband, Dave, track deer out, and I thought he was crazy. The first time I seen it, I thought he was crazy. And he just lives for it. He dens coyotes and stuff like that, so he has to be able to track them back to the den. But he'd assume track deer than to sit on a hill and glass. Like, he'll start the morning out tracking instead of glassing. And so I seen him do it enough times, and he got on a track one day, and we followed it for like a couple hundred yards. And he's like, "Hey, these deer are going to be on this other hillside. There's certain signs that they make. They're zigzagging back and forth. They're like looking for a bed." And no kidding, one of the biggest deer I've ever seen in my life was at the end of that track, and that's kind of what got me hooked.
Jeez.
And so I tried for a few years doing it. And it just, I mean, I can track deer out, but you have to know what a big track looks like in certain conditions. If you're on a pond bank and it's steep, the track's going to be all blown out and it's going to look giant and it's going to be a doe or a fawn. But and even in sand and stuff, it's really hard to tell, but if you have firm ground that's like lightly sprinkled on or like firm dirt, you can actually get a real judge on the size of the track, and it just takes looking at a whole bunch of them. But I was in Nevada, and I had a client, and we were in a unit that historically is a really good unit, and it's like a migration unit, and the migration's been happening later and later and later every year. And so I took that hunter in there, and there was two other guides in camp that were working for Greg, and they'd been hunting in there for 2 weeks already, and they're like, "Man, the biggest deer that are around here, like a 160 buck, you better be shooting it. That's just kind of how this year's going." And my hunter, he didn't care. He hunted that unit 10 years ago, and he killed a really big buck. He killed a 200-plus-inch deer, and he's like, "I don't need to kill a deer." He's like, "You got any ideas where there's some big deer?" And I just was like, "Well, about 4 or 5 years ago, I found this cool whitetail-looking horn over in this chaining, but there's nothing that lives there. It's on the wrong side of the mountain, and it's far away. It's kind of like in the desert stuff." And he's like, "Well, let's go give it a try." And I'm like, "All right." So we park in the middle of the chaining. Yeah, we park in the middle of the chaining, and there's a water up in the corner, so it's like a mile to the water. And so I'm like, "I'm just going to look for a track." And I'm walking through, and it's kind of like got that yellow grass that all the chainings have, and it's kind of hard to see. I can see elk tracks in it, and there's wild mustangs. I can see mustang tracks in it. And I get up close to the water, and it's like gravel all around the water, and there's one spot that it's a little bit of dirt, and I see the track, and I'm like, "Holy cow, this reminds me of the track that we tracked out that I was with Dave and seen that giant buck." And so I took a picture of the track and I sent it to Dave, and Dave's like, "You either have a calf elk or you have a really big buck." And he's like, "Just because it's a big track doesn't mean it's got big headgear." And I'm like, "Yeah, you know." And so I went back and talked to the hunter, and I said, "Hey, there's a really big track up here. It could be a calf elk or it could be a really big deer." And he's like, "Yeah, let's hunt it." He's like, "Yeah, let's hunt it." And I said, "Okay, you got to realize we may not see a deer for the rest of the hunt. This was on day one. We might not see a deer the rest of the hunt." And he's like, "That's okay." And so we hunted it for a few days, didn't find anything. In the middle of the day, I would try to find his track, and I couldn't really find his track. I'd find it here and there, but this chaining's like two sections that are 1 square mile that are attached to each other. And I walked through almost that entire thing over the course of 3 days, and we would glass it morning and evening, and I'd try tracking throughout the day. And I don't remember what day it was, day four, day five, evening, day four, day five.
At this point, have you seen any deer?
Haven't seen a single deer. Nope.
Oh, geez. Okay.
There isn't deer living there. We're going off of it's either a really big deer or a calf elk.
Yeah.
So,
like, at this point, were you like, oh, this might be a calf elk? Or were you, like, pretty confident? You're like, we're going to find this thing.
You know, it was worth it to me. Like a calf elk has a set. Like, it was worth it to me to see what was at the end of this track, right? And I knew
right.
There was a deer in there because I had found that shed 5 years prior to this. For 6 years
and
prior
felt
to
like
it,
you had a bigger deer to hunt or even anything close to what it could be.
Oh, right, because we had talked with the guys at camp and nobody was seeing anything over like 140 bucks. And so
okay.
We weren't feeling like we were missing out on anything by doing what we were doing.
Right.
And so we went 4 days or I can't remember quite, but without even seeing a single deer. And then in the evening, about an hour before dark, there was a spot in, like right in the middle of this chaining that I was on his track that same day in the middle of the day. I was on his track and there was his track or the calf elk track was in this particular spot like 4 or 5 different times. And what helped is it had just rained. It rained the first day, so everything was pretty fresh.
Oh, okay.
So his track was in that one spot at least 4 or 5 times. And so I was really focusing on glassing there, and I glassed the buck up.
No
way. I was like, you got to be kidding me. This is actually going to work. And so I got the hunter and, we were at like 1,600 yards at this point.
Wait,
so
did you recognize the buck right away? Like, were you like, that's a buck like I have the shed to?
No, I really didn't. Like, I kind of forgot about the shed. Like, the very first day, I said, hey, there's a spot that I found the shed, and I never thought about it after that.
Yeah.
At all. I wasn't thinking about that. And so that buck
okay.
was at like 1,600 yards. And so there was like 2 little rolling hills in this chaining that we could make up some time. But we only got a half hour of light left. And so we're working down. We get to the first one. I knew we were about 800 yards away. And then we had to get to the second one. And we ended up getting to 250 yards away from the buck. And
no way.
He's like, how big is it? And I'm like, it doesn't matter. That thing's big. And like,
yeah,
it was always facing straight on from the time I glassed it up to the time he shot it. It didn't move an inch and we couldn't see it. There was no one leading us on the radio or anything. Cause Trevor was there, but he couldn't see us or the deer. And so we got in and he shot the deer and it just drops and we get up to it and it's got eye guards going all over the place and well, it's got 2 eye guards, but it's a big old bladed eye guard and on one side and then it's got a big eye guard on the other side and it's this whitetail framed deer and I'm like, that right there just set me up for, I guess, just walking around in the hills looking at the ground at tracks.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. You were able to, like, stick with it that long without seeing a deer and, like, not even, like, being confident first that it was even, like, I'm sure you were pretty certain it was a deer track, but, like, you had no idea what was it. At the end of that track, like that's tough
right.
to do to for multiple days on end, especially with a client.
Yeah, and we didn't even know that there was. I mean, I didn't know any previous knowledge about that deer other than the shed, but I thought for sure it was a track. And when I sent it to Dave, he's like, "Yeah, that's." I never even thought it could be a calf elk. Like I didn't until he said it, and so there was. in the back of my mind, I didn't tell the hunter that I thought it was a calf elk. I just told him I thought it was a big deer.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It ended up being a big deer, and that kind of got the bug started for me. But that buck, he's got just a straight up white tail frame. Every point comes off of the beam, and he has 14 inches of eye guard. It's pretty cool.
Jeez. What did he end up going?
He went 194, I think is what he was.
Jeez, that's so cool. Everyone else is seeing 140 bucks, and you go out and take your client and kill a 190 plus. That's sweet.
Yeah, and in that, it was really cool how it all worked out. Like, in the last 7 or 8 years, that was the biggest buck that over 30 or so clients had killed in that unit. So it was pretty
really?
Cool. Yep.
That's cool.
It's not like hunting the strip or hunting the good units in Nevada. It's like a no name. It's just the elk unit. So it was pretty rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. That's sweet. So yep. One thing I kind of like, when you get down to like day three or four without seeing a buck, like how do you keep yourself motivated to like keep waking up and glassing and tracking all day? Like, do you have any tricks or anything that you do to kind of stay motivated?
Well, that situation, I mean, you always, as a guide, you always have to be motivated, whether you're down or up. You have to act like you're motivated, because the thing that kills the hunt the fastest is if the client doesn't have faith that it can get done.
Yeah.
But in that situation, it was easy because nobody was seeing any bucks. So that it made it really easy to do that. But like somewhere on the strip, if you've seen the deer is going to be there. He just might not have to come get a drink for a couple of days, and that's why you're not seeing him. And so,
I see.
I mean, me and Trevor, we like to have fun. Like, if you've ever met Trevor, or if you ever get to meet Trevor, you will never laugh so hard in a hunt, ever. He's got more stories than he can tell you in the time you'll be in camp. But Trevor is what makes... He lightens the mood up. If you miss a 220 buck, he'll lighten the mood up that second. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Trevor's the one that keeps everybody happy or keep the morale up.
Yeah,
like,
no, I think.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just saying about the tracking all day is, as guides, this goes for every guide. I would speak for every guide. I think we want to kill the animal just as bad as the hunter. Like I don't think there's a single guide out there doing it that doesn't want their hunter to kill. And so we want the hunters to have as much success as they want it for themselves, or even more.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. No, I think there's some valuable information in that story with just being able to stick it out, being able to just kind of try things that you're not sure if they'll work, and then just stay motivated. And then I think even what you said about Trevor, just like always kind of lightening the mood and having fun, and I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah, the cool thing, a little side story, but the cool thing with that deer, I've been around a lot bigger deer, but why that story is so significant, two reasons, is trying something new and it working out the way that it did. Like, it's hard to change the way that you hunt, but from changing and doing something like that and trying to track a deer, we've killed three or four more deer since then off of a track, whether it was finding a big track and killing the deer, or just tracking it out until we found it and killed it.
Yeah. Gee, that tracking fascinates me so much because I just feel like that's almost how you have to kill big deer nowadays because everyone has great glass. Everyone can glass. But it just seems like tracking is almost kind of like a lost art. And if you can track, I mean, deer have to leave tracks. So you can typically find at least older age class deer if you're good at it.
Yeah, and you're gonna get fooled. You have to do it you can do it anywhere, but you have to have the right conditions as far as the weather. You have to have the right ground, and you have to have deer density plays a big part of it. It works the best in low deer density areas, just because if the track you're tracking gets in a wash and there's hundreds of other deer tracks, it's really hard to stay on it.
I see, that makes sense. So when you were trying to, like, it seems like you're a pretty good tracker now, but when you're starting out, like, what are some of the things you would do to, I guess, practice? Like, would you be out tracking like now, or what are some of the things that you did to get good at it?
Well, it's hard. I don't know. It's hard with everything. Everybody can kind of, like in the construction world, guys can measure or can tell you what a foot looks like or 6 inches or even an inch looks like. A big buck is just like anything else. When they're fully mature, their track's going to be bigger than anything else. And so what helps the most, I mean, I started doing it a lot shed hunting. Everybody sees tracks when they're shed hunting and be like, hey, there's a lot of animals in here. But I started actually tracking that animal out, depending on how fresh it was and how early I was there. But I would do it with elk because they leave a bigger track and they're easier to follow. You can almost run on an elk track. But I started finding sheds that way just by following one set of tracks in fresh conditions during shed hunting season.
Okay.
And then it also helps to track out deer and see what they actually look like to judge, hey, this is what a big track looks like. This is what's on his head. But I've been fooled before. I've tracked out cactus bucks, and they were probably 10 years old, but they were only had little nubs on their head.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The hunters don't like that too much when you do that.
Yeah, I imagine. That's cool. So, I kind of, you came over earlier and kind of showed me some of your rider industry stuff, and man, I was super impressed. I just want to talk about that for real quick and kind of get some information out. You have some new stuff coming. Are we good to talk about that?
Yeah, we can talk about it. I haven't released it yet, but we'll be releasing it when this podcast comes out.
Okay, so Hunter came over and he showed me this bipod, and I've used a few different bipods, but I was super impressed with this. It attaches to the Picatinny rail on your rifle, and then it has different adjustments. You can go super low or super tall. But the thing that kind of that set it apart for me is when you get your bipod placed, there's almost like a release thing you pull on the side, and you can turn the rifle. We'll have to do like a video of it. I'll post it on Instagram to kind of make. But so you don't have to pick up your rifle again and put the bipod down after the shot, or if the deer moves a little bit. I just thought it was super cool, and I don't know, you could probably explain it better, Hunter, but I was super impressed.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. So it's made, we're going to actually call this the Rider Fat Boy 6, and once you see it, you'll understand where the Fat Boy comes from. And the 6 stands for the carbon fiber legs 6 inches long. So just like any other bipod, the legs, any other high-end bipod, the legs will deploy at like a 45 to the barrel, like kind of going outward, and then they'll also go to a straight 90 position. And then they also have the legs. Once you open up the legs, they have two positions. They have more like your straight up and down position, so you can get the bipod taller, or they have one more lock that gets them out like on like a 20 degree angle to where you can get the bipod lower. And then the reason that the legs are made out of carbon fiber is because there's three sections in these legs. You quarter twist this counterclockwise, and the leg will come, one leg will come out of the main tube, and then you can turn it another quarter turn, and so you have three leg sections. And so with the bipod being at its lowest position, so the leg's all the way in at its lowest position, it will sit at 5 inches off the ground from the ground to the fore end of the stock. And so that gets your gun, because your comb's below the fore end of your stock, that gets your gun practically level at the lowest point, and then at the tallest point, it will get up to 20 inches. And so in certain scenarios, you could sit with it hunched over, but we're going to make another model that will extend longer. It will just be a longer overall length. And then, like Conley was saying, like every other bipod on the market, it has a tilt feature to where you can get your level on your scope level to make a long-range shot. But what the coolest thing is, and I'm not aware that there's any other bipod that does this, is on the side of the bipod where it attaches to the gun, there's another lever. And so if you can imagine your gun pointed downrange or whatever you're going to shoot, if you take a shot and the target moves, the animal moves, you can loosen this lever and the bipod will stay stationary and the gun will swivel. Your gun can swivel 360 degrees around your bipod.
Yeah, that swivel option is really cool. And like I, when you were showing me, like I was thinking of this specific time I was on the Utah General, and I had a pretty big deer, and he was walking, and I got it set up, but he was with a couple other bucks. I wanted to make sure it was him, so I hurried scan, make sure it was him. But he was walking into the cedars, and I remember I had to pick up my whole gun with a bipod and try to get it set again, and then like one of my legs was on a rock, so I had to hurry and adjust it. And I was just thinking, like, if I had that I could just keep my tripod legs planted where they were steady and I could swivel, I feel like I would have killed that deer. But I didn't kill him because he got into the cedars before I could get set up. But that part right there of the bipod is just so cool. It's a great idea.
Yeah, thanks. We're pretty excited about it, so we hope everybody will like it.
Yeah, for sure. And then you also have like your universal, what are those called, that will hold your gun and stuff?
Just our universal rider. So for people that don't know, I'm just going to keep this short. But for people that don't know, this is a gun mount. It doesn't mount in your window or anything. It just slides in between your seats or seats and center console. And it has a gun clamp mounted to it to where everybody's put their gun in between the seats and just jammed it in there. But you end up beating your gun up. You end up beating your truck up. And so it holds your gun in place. You have quick, easy access to your gun. If you're just going from glass and spot to glass and spot, you can put it in there and it will stay just as safe as if you have it in a case. And you're just not a lot of guys will just, after the morning hunt, everything's all perfect the night before the hunt starts, but after opening morning, everything's just like a yard sale. Everything you just pile in your truck and stuff. And I actually came up with this because of a missed opportunity on a giant strip buck. And so he would have his gun in his front seat, and his gun would bounce around and beat up the center console of my truck. And he ended up gun hitting so hard in the truck that he ended up missing a buck that we hunted for 9 days. So,
no. Jeez. Yep. And yep. Then your new one, too, is a gun clamp with a quick release. So you could put it on like a tripod or something and you're able to shoot off the tripod.
Yeah, so we've always, so for people that know, this part's going to be new for you. You used to have 1/4 and 3/8 screws holding the gun clamp to the bottom of the base. And people would use it as a gun clamp. They'd throw it onto a tripod that has an arca rail attachment, like a ball head tripod, to use this as a shooting saddle. Well, now you can leave the base in the truck and take the clamp off. We've made this bracket that's all one piece, and it's just a quick release that will release the clamp. And so the clamp can stay attached to the gun if you want it that way. So like right in your truck, you can undo this lever and the clamp will stay attached to the gun. Or you can take your gun out and take the clamp off, and it just takes a few seconds to get your gun off, to where the older model was our Universal Rider. We're still going to keep it, but then this one's going to be called the Universal Pro, and the Pro will just allow you to get the clamp on and off of there really fast.
I see. Yeah, there's some cool stuff, and the Universal model is available right now on your website, right?
Yeah, and then we're going to do, we'll have the Pro in about a month or so. It will be ready. But anybody that already has a Universal Rider, this bracket will work on any Universal Rider. So we'll be selling this bracket by itself too, if it's something if you want.
Okay. And then with the bipod, there might be some pre-orders coming soon too.
Yeah, had a lot of interest. Probably half of them are already spoken for. So I think I'm going to open up a pre-order. Hopefully we don't sell out of them, but it would be a good thing if we did sell out of them. Everybody I've shown it to asked me how many can they get.
Yeah, well, I got to see it in person. I will say I was impressed. It's pretty neat. It's something that you're definitely going to need if you're serious about killing big deer.
Yeah. I think it will definitely help, and we're trying to, when you see it and then you see the price point that it's at, I don't know why you wouldn't give it a shot.
Right. Yeah, you were kind of telling me the price point, what area you're thinking, and I was pretty shocked. It's about half of what I thought it would be, so I think people are going to get a pretty good product for not something that's going to break the bank.
Yeah, when I was trying to figure out the price, I was just thinking, like, I could charge double what I'm planning on charging, and I'd be right there with every other competitor, but I just feel comfortable with where it's at, and I don't know, I just want to get it out there to a lot of people and have them try it, see how they like it.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a good idea. So can you kind of like just give people your information on that, like how they can find Rider Industries and stuff like that?
Yeah, we have a website. It's just riderindustries.com. And then on
Instagram. And that's How are you spelling that?
It's RYDR, Industries.
Okay.
Yep.
Perfect.
And we'll have
All
the
right.
pre-order, have the pre-order in there for the bipod, and then I'll probably just do a pre-order on the Universal Pros too as well.
Awesome.
Yep.
excuse me, sorry. So if we didn't really talk about this, but if you're okay with it, I'm kind of fascinated by your tracking story. Do you mind giving us one more story of a deer you tracked down?
Yeah. It's a similar story. Do you want a story of tracking a deer or finding a track and then killing it from glassing, or you want a tracking story of tracking it and killing it on the track?
Whatever you think's a better story. You got too many, so just, yeah, whatever one you're willing to tell.
I'll just tell another one. This one happened, actually, so we killed that buck in Nevada, and I was just so pumped about the tracking. So I came back, and like a week or 2 weeks later, the strip hunt was going to start. And this was the first year of no trail cameras. And so everybody was trying to do everything they could. And like, I just come off of that giant high of tracking, and everybody was like, it was the hardest year to find big deer. And it was in 2022. Like, I feel like that was the hardest year that I've had as far as hunting. I think everybody else would say that was a pretty rough year, but I went down into this area, and we got in on the strip, and the tracking was on my mind. So that 7 or 8 days before the hunt had started, everybody was glassing, everybody was getting their butt kicked. We really didn't have – I mean, we had a few big deer, but we weren't able to turn them up in those 7 or 8 days before the rifle hunt started. And so I would just drive and – the strip the last few years is we got some moisture during the hunt or right before the hunt. And so the conditions were just ideal to start tracking. And I got into this area that was kind of sandy, and it had just rained the night before. And so I glassed a little ways away, and then 3 or 4 hours into driving down roads and seeing fresh sign tracks, I come across one big buck track. I'm like, I'm going to just track this thing out. And so this was the day before the hunt, and this was like maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon when I started tracking this track. And we knew there was a big buck, but he was like another 2,000 feet in elevation. I was just down below a rim that we knew there was a big buck on top of this, but we couldn't never glass him up.
Yeah.
And so I'm clear off the rim about 2 miles from where that deer should be, but 1,500 to 2,000 feet below that elevation. And I get on this track at like 2 o'clock, and I track it until, I don't remember what time it gets dark that time of year, 7 o'clock or 7:30. And right at when I'm tracking and trying to find a deer, I just carry my tripod fully extended just so if I need to look at something real quick, I can. So I leave my binos on my tripod and leave it fully extended. And
I see.
Right at dark, I come out to the edge of the trees, and like 600 or 700 yards away in the straight line that the tracks are in, I glass up a giant deer. And it's the only deer that we've seen. Yeah, and so this is the night before the hunt. And so I'm like, well, there we go. I finally got something. We got something to hunt.
Like how big?
I mean, I was really excited. This is going to sound dumb, but on the strip, it wasn't They figure he's probably like, he was like 210, but he was mostly like, he was mostly typical. He had a few little teeny extras, but he was probably like a 205 typical, and that was really, that was giant for 2022.
Yeah, like one of the bigger deer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was. And the typical that big. It was just going all those days with five or six guys and not really having anything to go off of opening morning. And that tracking helped us have at least somewhere to start. And so
yeah,
we would get to this point every single day and try to glass. And I could we could never find the deer. Like, for the first 2 days, we just glassed and glassed. The hunter couldn't move around, like, all that well. And so I knew if we needed to get in there, I needed to save his energy. So on, like, day three or day four, I finally went and found his track again. We got some moisture the night before, and so everything was freshened back up. And I had him sitting on the hill after we had glassed, and I started tracking him out, and the deer kind of moved. He moved like three quarters to a mile from where I had seen him that first time. And so we were looking completely in the wrong area for 3 or 4 days. And so we moved in the next morning with a couple of us. We had Trevor's hunter, my hunter, and Bob's hunter in there. And, we glassed the buck up, and we ended up, Bob's hunter ended up killing that deer. But it wasn't the deer I thought it was on top. I think there was two different bucks, and I got mixed up on the track. And so the big 210 type buck is the deer I've seen, but I was following a bit. He was still a big deer. He was in the 190s, but there was two big deer in there that I didn't know about. And so I think what happened is I was on that big buck's track, and I might have bumped him and seen him at last light, and then I found a new buck's track. That's why we didn't see him for 3 or 4 days. And so we ended up killing another big deer on a different track.
That's pretty crazy. Just kind of cool too. Like, you probably would have never even been in that area if you hadn't tracked that buck out. And yeah, maybe you didn't kill the buck that you tracked out and saw, but like, you're in that area and hunting that area because of tracks.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, Trevor and Bob, between those two, they've both been out there 15 or so years. They're like, yeah, we never would have thought to hunt right here.
Yeah, so. that's cool. Hey, well, anyways, I appreciate you telling some stories and kind of sharing your new releases with Ryder and then your next level outfitting. You guys have an Instagram page for that too, right?
Yep.
Just next level outfitting, I think.
Yeah, I think there's so it's next_level_outfitters.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Yeah. One more little side note.
Yeah.
The tracking, I don't want to give away all the secrets. I gave a lot of them up, but the cool thing, I've really come to like the tracking so much because you kind of get the bug. Like, you kind of get the bug for long range shooting, and you get the bug for like finding sheds and stuff. I got the bug for tracking deer, and so I liked it so much. That's why the story I told you first, the first tracking story with the whitetail buck, I actually named my boy Tracking.
That's so cool. I like that name a lot.
Yep.
He's going to be an expert tracker too.
I wish I would have learned as soon as he's going to learn.
Yeah, that's so cool. Well, thanks again for getting on and all that.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you got this thing going again.
Yeah, anytime you want to get on and tell Buck stories, you're welcome.